What's going on, everybody? This is Alex Williams. You're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, señores and señoritas. This is Chris Shiflett, and you are listening to another fine, fine episode of Walking the Floor. Coming to you live from my hotel room in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'm here to report that America is cold, baby. It's cold out here. It's freezing, literally freezing. And I'm from California. I don't know how to handle it. I didn't pack right. I didn't bring the right jacket. I didn't bring the right pants. I had to buy some gloves in Des Moines. I got some nice gloves, though. They're nice. They keep my hands warm now. We had a great day off in Des Moines the other day. We played soccer out at the Soccer House. Thank you, Soccer House, for hosting us. We got a bunch of our usual crew out there. Plus, we got Jed, bass player from the Struts. And we got Tommy that works with the Struts, too. We got my main man, Nate Mendel, out there. Jed and Nate formed this, like, bass player, attack, front line, striker, you know, team. It's awesome. We had a crazy show there last night, too. For those of you that were in attendance, you know Dave's voice was super duper thrash, but God, he pulled it off. I don't know how he does that, but he turned it into an awesome show. And we'll see what happens tonight in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, baby. Oh, I'm a little crusty this morning. It's been a weird week. Weird week for politics, man. Had that crazy Donna Brazile excerpt from her book where she throws, like, everybody under the bus. Hillary, the DNC, Obama, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Didn't quite know what to make of that. And then you had some big Democratic wins in Virginia and New Jersey, where a couple of milquetoast corporate Democrats got elected to be governor. You had some good progressive wins elsewhere. And then I read there was this Washington Post poll that suggests that if the election were held right now, a year into Trump's presidency, that Trump would still beat Clinton, which I thought was really fascinating. It seems to me, you know, I'm like a lefty, right? And I'm way to the left of like the sort of corporate Democrat people that run that party. But it seems to me, as an outsider looking in, that the soul searching that they should have been doing this past year hasn't really done a whole lot to change the sort of status quo of the party. And if I could offer some free advice to the Democratic Party, I'd say, why don't you just look at who the most popular politician in America is right now? That's Bernie Sanders, in case you don't know. And just emulate his policy ideas. But you'd have to do it sincerely. You'd have to actually mean it. That's the problem. That's the problem with those corporate Dems. They don't mean it. Well, that's my political rant for the day. But one other thing. I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't say something about that horrific shooting down in the church in Texas last weekend. It is so saddening to me as an American citizen that these kind of mass shootings happen with such regularity that it's hard to even keep track of them anymore. And over, every time people say, oh, this is going to be the thing. This is going to be the tipping point. It's going to be the time that we change and we all get, you know, some good gun regulations on the books that solve this thing. And it never frickin' happens. And how in 2017... we still can't have a rational, logical discussion in this country about how to curb gun violence is just frickin' beyond me. Look, it's real simple. In countries that don't allow their citizenry to have easy access to weapons like we do, they don't have these mass shootings. They don't have the gun violence that we have in this country. So for the majority of us here that support gun regulation, that don't want to see these things happen over and over, that don't equate like your stockpile of bullets with freedom, let's just make these NRA nut jobs irrelevant. How that happens, I don't know. But I have no idea how this teeny tiny sliver of the population here has such outsized power. I mean, I get it. It's the NRA is a lobbying wing of the gun manufacturing industry, and they've got a lot of money, and they put a lot of pressure on our elected officials. But the rest of us need to put that same pressure on our elected officials and make their voices irrelevant. That's it. Okay, this is a little bit of an odd segue, but let's go to Zounds.com and sell some music gear, people. Come on. Sorry, I was getting a little heavy there, but I couldn't help myself. Zounds.com, it is your place for all your music gear needs online. I just hung with Billy and Chris from Zounds.com when we played in Champaign. They're great people. They're not salespeople. They're musicians. We talk gear. That's what we do. And they want to talk gear with you. So get on over to Zounds.com and get what you need. Okay, let's get on over to the interview. All right, so my guest today on Walking the Floor is Mr. Alex Williams, a young up-and-comer that recently put out his debut record called Better Than Myself on Big Machine. You know, you may recall that a week or two ago I was sort of marooned in Nashville when we had to postpone some shows, and so I wound up scheduling a bunch of interviews, and Alex was nice enough to come by my hotel room, and we sat down and had a really great chat. You know, it's kind of a, it can be difficult when you're interviewing somebody that only has one album out because, you know, there isn't that much to talk to. It's like somebody that has like 10 albums out or whatever. But Alex and I got right into it. He's a great dude, great singer-songwriter, and I think you're really going to dig this one. This is Alex Williams on Walking the Floor. So I was reading your bio, getting ready for this, and I was so stoked to read that you grew up listening to metal. Yeah. It's such an odd thing for like a guy your age, yeah, and with the. I mean, I guess it's not that odd. You're a musician, and we all listen to like a wide array of stuff. But mm-hmm. I mean, I was like a total heavy metal kid when I was growing up. And I think I read in there it was like your dad's records or something. Your dad's probably like my age or something, was probably listening to more or less the same shit that I was listening to in the early mid-80s or whatever.
Yeah, the 80s hair metal stuff.
So like what would have been in his record collection that you were listening to?
He did like the LA Guns and Cinderella and Rat and all that stuff. You know, and he listened to a bunch of that. And we went out and saw, he took me, I think my first concert was like Motley Crue.
Really? Yeah. Nice.
So luckily I got saved and started listening to Billy Joe Shaver and Waylon. And
Do you ever feel like some of that shit turns up in your music a little bit?
No.
Like, did you go through a phase when you were playing of like woodshedding rat songs and stuff like that?
No.
Or were you already through with that?
Like originally, I was given a Schecter guitar, so I was like badly trying to learn those songs over too much distortion.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I know we still listen to some of that on the van and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
Yeah, not too much anymore.
Yeah, I know. It's funny with a lot of that stuff. I mean, and I say this, like, I unashamedly, like, grew up listening to all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it's funny how, like, a lot of it, I still have, like, a nostalgic attachment to it.
Yeah.
But I don't really ever go there.
Right.
You know, I never really seek that out in my Spotify, you know, that much.
Yeah, it's there. So,
anywho, let's talk about your record, Better Than Myself, which mm-hmm. this is your debut record, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know if you had. You know, a lot of people have like a indie record that's not doesn't mm-hmm. really exist in the digital world. So I didn't know if it was anything like that. But this is your first record.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah.
How did that come about for you?
Well, I was with an old band or a band in the past for about 5 years and. You know, we didn't have a bass player. It was like keyboard player, strat player, drummer, acoustic, and it was a strange thing. You know, we played a bunch, and you know, I was ready to do my own thing, and started. Yeah, it's just writing more songs and really getting down to kind of what I wanted to put out there, and ended up meeting Julian, who produced my album at Big Machine, and we did it, man. You know,
how's that work? Is the guy that produced your record, is he like a house producer at Big Machine? Like, did he sign you as well? Because I always read about that with like country artists, like the guy that signs and winds up producing the record, and you don't really hear that too much in like rock music. It's not like that. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think he came from Los Angeles. He did like the last Glen Campbell record, done Roseanne Cash and stuff,
but does he work for Big Machine?
Or yeah, he does.
Okay.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. So, and he's a great guy and good producer. So,
and who played on that record?
Tom Bukovac played on there. Danny Dugmore on steel.
I don't really know Bukovac personally. I've met him a couple times.
Yeah,
our keyboard is friendly
Walsh
with him
right now.
Yeah. But that guy's a ridiculous guitar player.
Yeah, man. I think he just closed that guitar shop.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Had some gems in there.
Yeah, for sure.
But no, it was a great lineup of people, and we all tracked live, and it was awesome, man.
What was that like to go from, you know, like this being your first? I assume it's not the first time you're in the studio, but like the first time you're making like a proper record. I mean, what was that like to be in there with all these A-list players?
Man, it was cool. I really appreciated not having to just overdub everything and just, you know, how a lot of the time it's done where, you know, they track the songs and the artist comes in and just lays down. I mean, it was awesome to be able to play the songs. Yeah.
And were you singing along?
Yeah, you know,
like getting live takes kind of thing?
Yeah. But some of it, you know, vocals we overdubbed and stuff,
sure.
But the basic tracks and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was great.
It's all coming together like in the room.
Yeah, man.
How much do your songs change from, you know, what you're bringing into the studio to what comes out the other end?
Man, I didn't expect it to turn out the way it did, you know? I mean, I was really happy with the turnout, but, you know, going in, originally, I thought it was going to be more of a stripped down thing, you know, and it turned out to be better than what I expected. So,
right.
That was cool, man.
I mean, Big Machine's known as a mainstream country label more.
Yeah.
And your record to me doesn't sound like that. You know, it sounds a little like something different for that label.
I was pretty fucking surprised. Dude.
Really? Right. Well, so. I mean, my question is, and I've been wondering this for a while, at what point this was going to happen, but do you think that the mainstream country music business side of things is being affected or influenced by guys like Sturgill Simpson, Chris Stapleton? I mean, clearly Chris Stapleton, obviously, but do you think some of the more like, you know, Jason Isbell, Sturgill Simpson type artists are reflecting back on mainstream country music?
I would say so. I mean,
like, you know what I mean? Do you think like 5 years ago that they would have been interested in an artist like you?
No, I mean, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. They've definitely helped out kind of turn the tide a little bit. I mean, when I hear like, you know, they're saving country music and it's coming back around. It's like, man, even in the 70s and stuff, you know, there was outlaw country. There was what they call pop country. It's always been there.
Always. So, you go back to as far as there's been country music,
there's been
that sort of divide.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. I think it's, there's a lot more quality stuff out there than there has been in the past. You know.
Right.
I don't listen to the radio that much, but it's awesome to be given a shot at, you know, a place like that.
Well, I'm curious, like, what sort of lane are they marketing you as? Like, are they sending you out to like mainstream country music radio stations and that sort of thing, or is it like, are they more sort of alt country Americana?
Well, it's kind of like a side thing going on where they're just kind of letting me do my own thing and build it on the road. I've got some. They're playing a couple of tunes on Serious Outlaw or whatever.
Right, but, sure. Yeah.
We didn't do the mainstream push, which is kind of cool, man. I mean, that's everything that I listen to and I'm inspired by is, you know, not really played on mainstream radio, so it's good to be kind of in that lane and just doing stuff like that. So.
And who are you out there touring with?
We're out there with Blackberry Smoke right now. We've been on the tour with them and Aaron Lewis.
Nice.
So, doing that
thing.
Those
must be big shows. Like, how's that going?
Going really good, man. I mean,
what's that adjustment like for you, learning how to be up in front of a big crowd like that?
Well, I mean, we've probably been touring with Aaron for about a year now, and then tour just started.
Okay, so they had you out on the road, because your record just came out in August, right?
Yeah. So I was out before I had anything. I didn't have any merch at all. I had a business card with my email.
Right.
So people are like, where the fuck
can
I find
you? Man, you better yell at your manager. Don't put you out on the road with no merch, man.
Where the fuck, you know, where's your music at? I'm like, it hasn't been recorded yet.
Yeah. Feel free to tape it.
Yeah, man.
Was your record already made? Like, were you already kind of solid in what you were doing?
It was
that
done,
point?
But it didn't come out till this August, you know? So it's past August. So.
That's really interesting, because that seems like sort of the opposite of how a lot of country artists get sort of marketed, where it's like put out a single, see if it hits, then put you on the road.
Yeah. It was definitely an interesting way of going about it. But I mean, being out with Blackberry Smoke, I've been a fan of what they do since the first album, you know. And I love the fringe, the way it's supposed to be done.
Yeah,
you know? Southern rock. Maybe.
It's a trip being on stage playing songs that people haven't heard.
Yeah,
that's definitely you know. I mean, I experienced that with my own sort of side solo stuff that I do.
Man.
You know, I put out an album in the spring.
Yeah, that's great, man.
Oh, thank you, really, thank you. Yeah. I was fishing for that.
Yeah,
it no,
sucks,
but
man.
Only,
I'm just kidding.
The only time I had to go out and do a quick tour,
because
I was in the middle of making the new Foo Fighter record, was actually before my record came out.
Yeah,
and so we just went out and just played the whole new record, and that was pretty much the set.
Yeah,
but it was like to rooms full of people that had never heard any of the songs.
Right,
so it's a very different experience.
Yeah,
to like going out and playing. And, you know,
yeah.
songs that everybody knows and sings along to, and and all that sort of thing. I mean, what was that like for you with like your you know, your sort of crowd wrangling skills? It must have been good for you, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it is good, man. I mean, I think with the band that I'm on the road with, and my actual, you know, those guys that have been with me for a while. I mean, it's a lot different than what the album sounds like in a good way too. It's
really?
More raw and a lot heavier than what we got out on the record.
Things get louder and a little, little more distorted,
for sure.
And all that sort of thing.
Next album will definitely be more of just us four,
yeah.
us five. We had a steel guy, but yeah, man, it's been good. We got going out with Whitey Morgan in December.
Oh,
I saw
nice.
Hanging with him last night.
That makes sense.
Told me to tell you hi.
So. Oh, no, is he in town right now?
Well, Cody played at the Ryman last night.
Oh, really?
They
okay,
did
I
two
didn't
nights
know
of the Ryman. So.
Oh, man, I wish I'd known that because we got into town. We had to cancel a show yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, like we were talking about. But
yeah,
and I was here, but I didn't realize that was happening.
Yeah, so looking forward to that.
So what does your label, like what does a big label like the one that you're on expect from a young artist like you? What's the responsibility that comes along with getting a record deal with a label like that?
You know, I don't really know, man. I mean, I mean, just like all I feel that we have control over is just putting on a great show every night and building it, you know, the way it's supposed to be built, you know, not just going from bottom to top quickly.
But do they get involved in everything, every sort of aspect of your career? Are they actively involved in getting you out on the road and finding tours for you, working with your booking agent, your manager, like all that stuff?
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, it's, you know, meeting Aaron last year has kind of opened up a lot of doors, too, because we've been able to do some stuff with Hank and Skinner and obviously this BBS thing. So
how do those folks what do they make of you? Have you been received by some of those legends?
It's been good, man. I mean, they've still got it, even though, you know, Skinner, even with only one, I guess one or two if you count Johnny, who joined in the 80s, but they still fucking kill it.
So
it's been going over good. So
well, with your label, like, and them, like, you know, being involved in obviously all the stuff you do, like, have you had to say no to anything big yet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm wondering how a young artist in this business like carves out a little bit of power for himself.
Oh man,
has there been any moment where you're like, no, dude, I'm not doing that?
Yeah, no, I mean it's been good because they've just kind of let me do my own thing and just let me build it and. They haven't really told me to do anything at all, man,
which has
been a blessing and a curse, you know, because I'm still blind to, you know, it's nice to have some direction once in a while, but we're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know, it helps that the album's out now and we don't just have a business card, like I said. So.
Yeah, you know, you got a stack of CDs and some t-shirts to go with it, too.
Some t-shirts,
man.
Yeah. So, no, it's been really good to build it that way. And,
well, let's back up a little bit. Like, where'd you grow up? Where are you from?
I'm from Pendleton, Indiana, man.
Okay.
So it's a little north of Indianapolis.
All right. What's that like? What was your childhood like?
Pretty basic, you know.
Right.
You know, I started playing in the local bars when I was about 16, I'd say. And
but even before that, like was your family musical? What got you into music?
Man, nobody
besides
was.
Your dad's heavy metal records.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody was musical at all, man.
Nobody else played?
No. I just I guess once I started, my grandparents turned me on to Dreaming My Dreams and Redheaded Stranger both coming out, 75. Those were the two that...
I mean, I see your Whalen tattoo right there, so that must have left a big impression on
you.
You
flip
I'm
it over, it's Mariah Carey.
So. Oh, there you go, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just fucking with you. No, man, it's... nobody was musical in my family, and I just started doing it. And
How old were you when you started playing guitar and singing and stuff?
I started attempting to play guitar when I was about 11 or 12, and had this whole crate Electra thing, put the Kiss stickers all over it
You know,
I started taking it seriously when I was about 16 or 17. Started writing, and
so writing and playing in bands kind of went hand in hand for you?
Yeah, man, it definitely I feel like I've tried to suck less over the years. You know,
it's a good goal to have.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So it's
how do you think your writing has changed over the years or developed, or is it the same?
Well, I think it just comes with learning how to be inspired, you know, by music, and not just writing for the sake of doing it, you know.
Right.
I mean, I've started listening to a lot of different types of music, and you know, I'm inspired by obviously country music, but a lot of Texas singer songwriters as well, like Guy Clark and Towns, and it's just a wide palette, and I feel like I've just found myself a little bit more over the years, and it's definitely affected the songwriting part.
I read that Guy Clark biography.
Yeah, me too.
Did you read that?
It was great.
It paints a very romantic picture of Nashville during that time in the 70s and through the 80s and all that stuff.
That
I love the idea of like his house being sort of a writer's salon, you know, where people would just show up and everybody would be Rodney Crowell and Steve Earle and Towns and all these guys.
You can't find that anymore, man.
Really?
You can't do that, man.
You need to start that.
I know.
We're doing it at your house.
I know, man. I haven't seen in Heartworn Highways. You know, have you seen that?
Yeah.
You know, Christmas Eve sitting around the table, man. Oil lamps everywhere.
It's funny, man. I didn't have that growing up at all either, man. It's so funny. Yeah. Like the scene that I was sort of around musically in those formative years as a teenager, nobody was ever sitting around jamming. There was no campfire fucking hoedown guitar poles going on around my friends. As a matter of fact, that kind of shit was frowned upon because it was like hippie shit.
Was it really?
And everybody was like, fuck that hippie shit. You know what I mean? And I'm so bummed that we weren't all sitting around doing that, man. Mm-hmm. I feel like I missed something.
Yeah. Well... You're from California.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's awesome out there, man.
Have you toured out there much?
Yeah, we did. We've done, I think we just played in Turlock. Turlock, it's like kind of a small town place, but we did like Ventura and...
Oh, okay. And, that's not far from
Riverside where I grew up. And all that up here last year.
Have you played Pappy and Harriet's yet?
No, man. Oh. Up in Joshua Tree. I've been there and drank beer.
Oh, have you?
Whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's where you got to play.
Yeah.
That's the spot.
Yeah.
It looks like the best venue on the West Coast.
Yeah, it looks
man.
Killer.
Hands down.
Yeah. So,
okay,
on the list.
So you're getting into high school. You're starting to write songs. You're starting to play in bands. What are your early band experiences kind of like?
Well, I actually didn't really have a band until I got to college.
Oh, okay.
I was playing solo. My cousin owned a shrimper bar in Sargent, Texas, which is south of Houston. I went down there a bunch. And
were you going to college down there?
No, I was going to college in Nashville. But this was when I was about 16 or 17, just starting out.
Okay.
So my first gigs were just down there on the deck. In the Bay, so I just go back between Indiana and Texas and play, and I guess that's what got me into all the songwriters down there.
Right. Who turned you on to that? I mean, is there still like a real? I know Texas has a very sort of insular country music scene.
Yeah, it is.
And I know people people from Texas love Texas music. So
For sure.
Is that how you got turned? Was it like people down there? Are they still aware of, you know, Jeff Walker and Towns?
Yeah.
Guys?
There's like it's a fishing town down there. So, and it's such a strange place, but has this charm, man. It's just I met so many people down there that was like, hey, man, you got to check out Guy Clark, man, you got to check out Billy Joe Shaver, and I was like, when I started hearing that, I was like, fuck, man, I gotta get into this.
This is my shit.
This is it, man. So
when you went to college, you're going to college in Nashville. Was mm-hmm. it that Belmont
Yeah, I university? Went there for a year.
Seems like that's a pass-through for a lot of people that wind up, you know.
Yeah, and I thought, like, a major in songwriting, man. And that's a strange thing to have, you know. It helped out.
Is that a major?
It is, yeah. And it's I'm not sure if they still have it now, but it's hard to get educated, you know, book-wise, you know.
How do they teach that?
I think they have, like, I can't remember. They had, like, a bunch of, it was cool. You know,
is it like a creative writing class?
It was awkward,
class,
man. They had like a bunch of, you know, men and women around a table with guitars and stuff. And they're like, hey, write this verse within 10 minutes about this. And I was just like, man, it seemed a little contrived to me. You
but
know?
Is it priming people not so much to do what you do, but to go be part of the sort of songwriting culture of Nashville?
Yeah,
more
man,
of that sort of thing,
it's
doing
very,
co-writes and all that sort of stuff.
Not to bash that by any means, but it's a... It's very focused towards the machine that's going on, you know, in Nashville as far as that goes. And I just felt contrived, man. I quit college to play at Tootsie's thinking that was the ticket to the top.
And, it worked.
It was definitely a good place to get exposure.
And for
on
people
stage.
Listening that don't know about Tootsie's is one of the bars down on Broadway.
Yeah,
it's
man.
Like one of those cover bar kind
yeah.
of places, right?
And luckily I didn't get roped into doing the music that I don't want to play. You know,
right.
We had kind of the earlier shifts where it was still traditional.
It seems
Jimmy
like
Snyder
when
and stuff.
Anytime down I'm down there, just walking around or whatever, all I hear coming out of those bars is like Merle Haggard and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So is it still sort of, you know, centered on that kind of traditionalist country?
No, I mean, man, it's changed a lot over the year. I mean, at least when I walked by it, you know, I spent a lot of time at Layla's and Roberts and stuff because it's, you know, they stay very true to that.
Yeah.
But it's changed a bunch. I would have loved to be there in like 1969 or.
Sure. Yeah. Were those bars terrible. Not even like cover bars back then? Were they just like, was that just kind of where you went to get a gig to make it? Because now it seems like that's where you get a gig. Like,
well,
it's like it seems more like a dead end now. And I don't live here, and I don't really know the scene.
Yeah.
But that's what, you know what I mean. It doesn't feel like people playing in those bars.
Back
are on
then,
track to get a record deal and do that whole thing. You know what I mean?
Back then, I'm not sure if it was just all cover gigs. I think it was just a place for primarily a bar. You know, I mean, that's where Willie and Roger Miller used to go hang out there.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure he lived like in the bedroom above Tootsie's at one point. And it used to be a lot different than what it is. So.
Well, so how do you wind up, if you're doing that kind of thing, how do you wind up getting your record deal? Well, let's back up a little bit. So you had a band, but at what point did you go solo? And then how did that lead into you getting a record deal?
Well, I just came to a point where I wasn't fulfilled by the music that we were doing. And
was it the same type
always,
of thing?
Yeah, and no, not really. Mm. It was different.
Yeah.
All of those guys were great jazz players, you know.
Right.
So it had that influence, and it just wasn't really what I wanted to do. And I've always wanted to be my own artist, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I learned a lot from those guys, just, you know, playing with them so much, But yeah, the Better Than Myself song came inspired from what my drummer said to him. He was pissed off at me. He was like, man, your fucking songs are better than you are, man. I was like, oh, that sucks to hear, but I'll write that down.
What did he mean by that?
I'm not really sure, man. Right. I think, you know.
I mean, granted,
person,
I only met you 20 minutes ago, but you seem like a pretty nice guy. You
your
know,
songs are better than you are as a person. I was confused about that. I'm like, shit, man. Maybe he's right.
Man, I'm fucking up. Fuck.
No. So, it sucked to hear, but I don't know. It did. I decided to name the album that, not just because of what he said, but it just kind of signified a new beginning for me as an artist, and just felt right for the project. So.
Well, how long were you doing that? Like after you quit the band and just decided to go solo, how long was it before you wound up getting your deal?
Um, I, I think I had moved on in October from that band, and I think I signed on with Big Machine in March.
Oh, so it was pretty quick.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like another like 10 years of toiling and obscurity. Like it was.
Yeah,
it
happened. And I had like 60 or 70 songs that I had, you know, put down with Julian prior to that, and I just kind of picked out the 12 that I figured would be the best. And
oh shit! So you got a bunch of albums worth of tunes ready to go. Well,
yeah, I wouldn't say the songs are all there, you know.
Right,
but
right.
Yeah, I mean, they're got a lot of material and write all the time. So,
do you manage to continue to write even when you're doing all this other stuff out promoting your record and touring?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Mike, my guitar player, he and I are inspired by the same thing. So we write all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You write together?
Yeah, we write all the time, man. So it's nice to keep it rolling, man.
Yeah.
It's and get a lot of fucking anxiety, you know, just, you know, when I'm not writing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, fuck, man, I'm falling behind. I got to...
Right.
I need to read some more books or something, man.
Maybe that... totally. Yeah, maybe that Belmont class did something for you.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah, so... But we're staying busy playing and writing and looking forward to doing the next project. I think it's going to be a great depiction of what we do live, so...
Are you going to record it with your touring band?
Yeah, I am.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's your next, you know, year look like? Are you just going to be road dogging it from now till?
Yeah, we're on the this Blackberry Smoke Aaron Lewis tour until November 17th, and then we do those three shows with Whitey at the end of the year.
Nice.
New Year's Eve and Flint shows, Machine Shop.
Yeah, cool.
So,
and then when do you think you're going to get back in the studio?
I'm not sure, man. Hopefully next fall. It'll be a while.
Right,
you know,
right.
We'll see. So we got a lot of shows to play until then.
A lot of work to do. A lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
We're just getting rolling. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you wind up doing, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
It's always cool to see like a young artist, you know, just at the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man. So it's awesome to be able to do this, man.
Well, would you like to sing a song?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do it.
Pop open this cage.
All right. Ready?
Sure.
I'm going to do a song called Better Than Myself for you. I was told not long ago that my songs are better than myself. And someone told me not long ago that my songs are better than myself. That the reckless way I'm living, it don't match my melodies. That the written words I'm singing, they ain't got no honesty. It's all candy from a jukebox, it's burning down in hell. They said my songs better than myself. Well, I was told not long ago my songs are better than myself. Cause if a song comes from the heart, then my heart must be stronger than my health. And I'll stay up till the sunrise just looking for a rhyme. And I like getting drunk until it's just about showtime. Some nights upon this stage, I'm a hard act to sell. Thank God my song's better than myself. Truth be told, in every note I play. Truth be told, I don't care what you say.
was told not long ago, my songs are better than myself. So if you're still listening right now, I'd say this song is doing pretty well. You might hear it on some old jukebox that's burning down in hell, where my songs are better than myself. Y'all, my songs are better than myself.
Fantastic, man.
Thanks, man. Oh, dude, thank you, man.
You know, I realized sitting there looking at you playing that song on that beautiful Gibson, I didn't ask you anything about gear.
Yeah.
Or do you have, like, any kind of, like, magic special guitar that's, or is that it?
No, I actually just got this, man. I have a 1950 Gibson J50, and it's starting to split a little bit, so I had to
retire,
kind of use this out on the road, you know, because I don't. You know, I feel like it's going to snap in half mid-song.
What do you use to put your guitar through the PA? Because that's been like the bane of my existence is forever. I feel like acoustic guitar never sounds good through the PA. What's your trick?
Well, obviously I just do the DI with that, but I play a Tele as well. Just a 59 Relic, custom shop through the 67 Pro Reverb.
Yeah.
Had a little phaser on there.
Nice.
Go.
Yeah. The Whalen trick. I love that.
He really, I mean, if you listen to a lot of his records, it was really subtle, man.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, it's Steve
like
Earle.
You can barely hear it.
I interviewed Steve Earle recently, and I asked him about that because he does that on his new record.
That's great. It's a great record.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
he said that that Whalen had a phase. He didn't say phase 90. I think he said phase 45.
Uh-huh.
With the dial turned all the way down, so it's just like as slow as possible.
Yeah,
you know, which I think sounds about right.
Yeah, it does. If at some points, you know, it can get a little much. You know, I got to be like, all right, dude, I got to cut this out a little bit. You know? But I usually just use a small stone or whatever.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for coming and doing this today, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
I assume you skipped church this morning to come here.
I did. And then in the past 2 or 3 years as well. So.
Awesome, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, take care. My boots like snare drums on the front porch. All right, that was Alex Williams on Walking the Floor. Make sure you check out his debut record, Better Than Myself. And while you're at it, get on over to alexwilliamsofficial.com. Check out what he's up to. I know he's got a bunch of tour dates through the rest of the year and probably beyond that. Buy his tickets, buy his t-shirts, buy his CDs, stream his music, blah, 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 blah. That's it for this week. Don't forget, as always, get on over to Spotify. Follow the Walking the Floor with Chris Shiflett playlist. It's all your favorite songs. All you got to do is follow it. And don't forget also to get on over to the iTunes store and leave us a review and a rating and all that sort of stuff. It really helps. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Adios, amigos!